I love this recurring trope.
First on this one.
Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
It's a town for losers. I'm pulling out of here to win.
What? Wait, Patrick, I need you here to do the show.
Hello.
Whoa, how you doing, Jesse?
Hey, man.
I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing well, sir.
So we are rolling, and I think we're all set here.
Okay.
And we'll just get started, right?
Sounds good to me.
All right, here we go. All right, hang on. All right, it's Friday, Patrick.
It is.
All this week, we've had one call with our friend Tug Baker this week, and now we're calling another old friend.
It's so nice that we're catching up with these acquaintances.
I know,
made
isn't
over
it
the
great?
Years. It really is, yeah.
So with us on the phone via FaceTime today on Rockin' the Suburbs is Jesse Jackson.
Hello, Patrick. Hello, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, and thank you, Jesse, for being a supporter of the show and calling in. You know, and I know you called in for your year and stuff, but we really appreciate your support and everything you've done for us. So it's great to have you on again.
So, well, thanks. Well, you know, you could listen every day.
That's right.
Jesse, of course, is the host of a big-time Bruce Springsteen podcast called Set Lusting Bruce.
Yep.
How's that going?
It is going well. I'm up to 140-plus episodes.
Wow.
And I've got some fun ones going on this year. We're going through a series of we are taking every Bruce album, and a guest and I are ranking the songs from worst to first.
Nice.
And that's been a lot of fun. And I continue to talk to Springsteen fans from around the world, including Russia and UK, and of course, here in the good old USA.
Amazing.
That's very cool. Okay. And this is, of course, Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we wanted to talk with Jesse specifically today because he was just a week or so ago in sort of our part of the country, sort of the East Coast part of the country.
Yeah.
He took a trip to New York. Unfortunately, we didn't make it up from D.C.
to
hook up with him, but he was really busy. Because what were you doing, Jesse?
Well, it was a quick trip. I flew in, stayed at a pod hotel for the first time, had dinner at a nice restaurant, and oh yeah, I went to a Broadway show.
I wonder which one that was.
The Music Man.
Yeah.
South Pacific.
Yes. Cats.
No. I was lucky enough to get a ticket for Springsteen on Broadway.
Wow.
And I was in the house and got to see this amazing show. And it was just great. And, you know, we actually had a wonderful Rockin' the Suburb episode a few months ago where you took the discussion. You had a lot of people share what was the most they would pay for a ticket and who would they want to see in such an intimate setting.
So how did you get this ticket, first of all? Because the intimate setting is under 1,000 seats, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So how'd you get this ticket?
So top secret, no. there is a Facebook community of Springsteen fandoms that are all looking for tickets, and I was shut out every time I tried to order them. And a couple people reached out to me, and my wife made some connections, and someone said, I have a ticket on January 25th. If you want it, you can have it. And it was, then the question was, A, do I want to pay that much money? And B, can I afford, after paying that much money for a ticket, can I get to New York and back, without driving for 3 days?
Right.
And we crunched the numbers and we were able to, so I did get a ticket, and then the hard part was waiting.
Okay, so hang on. So back up here. So for people who don't know, you live in Dallas.
I live in Dallas, Texas. That is correct.
Okay, so you had to make it up from there. And
yes.
Did you have one ticket or two tickets? Or
I just had one ticket.
One ticket.
It would have made it easier, I think, if my wife is not a huge Springsteen fan. But then we could have thrown in a weekend in New York you know, as an excuse to go. But no, there was just the one ticket. And so I flew in, attended the show, and flew home the next day.
Got it. Okay. And did you say, or were you going to tell us how much you paid for this, or did you, should that be left?
No. Okay. I it was $400.
Okay. All right.
And
okay.
That's, I mean, it wasn't the highest price ticket. I was on the orchestra to left of the stage. I guess 7 or 8 rolls, maybe 10 rolls. I didn't count. But other people have said this is an incredibly small venue and there is not a bad seat in the house.
Right.
And I agree with that. I had a great view and it was wonderful to see it live.
So we just had on our show a band called Belladair, and they played in our house.
Yeah.
And the drummer from that band had just gone to see Springsteen on Broadway. We didn't really talk to him about it on the show. I sort of talked to him about it off mic,
yeah.
But he said that it was worth whatever he spent,
yeah.
A lot of money. And,
yeah.
And he just talked about it just being this very unique experience. So tell us what the show is actually like.
Yeah. I agree with him. The first thing that you strike, and you have to kind of get past the what you paid for the show. That's, let's just go forward. It's
right.
The show. The lights go out. He walks out on stage, and there is no good evening or like a normal concert. And it isn't like he starts playing music immediately. He starts talking, and he starts talking about his magic trick and how he's used it for over 40 years and how it's helped him, you know, survive rock and roll. And, you know, he makes the joke, this is the first ever 5-day-a-week job he's ever had, is this, you know, on Broadway. And it strikes you very quickly, Jim and Patrick, this is a Broadway show, not a concert. And there's nothing. He sounds very relaxed and he sounds very casual, but it is the same thing every night. He is going through the same stories. He is doing the same lines. He did acoustical guitar. I do want to ask, and I wish musicians would tell me, does it really matter which guitar? You know, I mean, he changed guitars almost like every song. Did some songs on the piano. And a lot of stories, and some stories from the book, some stories not in the book, but it is the first third is the story of his childhood. Then the last third is kind of the second third is the story of kind of his career. And then the last third is kind of life in general. And it's very powerful. As I said, a lot of great stories, a lot of laughter. It's funny. It's funnier than you would think it would be. I'm biased. I'm a big Bruce fan, but I acknowledge that when you see an interview with Bruce, he tends to laugh a lot at, you know, at the end of his statements. He's not necessarily a great interview, but in this case, he was just absolutely beautiful telling the stories.
Now, how much, Jesse, I think for something like this, it would be, you know, you mentioned the waiting, right? And we know, as Tom Petty said, that's the hardest part. But did you read other reviews and other people's experiences and sort of say, like, I know exactly what's going to happen at, you know, the 40-minute mark and here in, you know, in the hour? Or did you just sort of try to make it as fresh as possible?
That's a wonderful question. There is a very divide among Springsteen fans. A very name of my podcast, Set Listing Bruce, expends that people tweet set lists and people follow and try to know everything they can before they go to a show. But there is a huge percentage of fans that didn't want to know anything before they walked in.
Yep.
In fact, when I did my episode where I talked about the show, I put in a spoiler silence. I said, okay, at this point, I knew what songs, I knew some of the stories. If you've read the autobiography, there's nothing that's going to be surprising about the show except the emotional impact of it.
Right.
So I went in knowing most of the songs, knew some of the stories. I had forgotten the ending, but once he got into it, I remember, oh, yeah, that's right. spoilers, he ends with an Our Father.
Oh, really?
Yes. Hmm. And strangely appropriate. It in a lot of ways, Patrick and Jim, this almost feel like him giving a testimony, his story, whether it's a revival meeting or a, you know, like a support group, you know, he's sharing his story. And I don't want to say it's morbid, but it is very, his mortality is there, and he is very aware that the road ahead of him is shorter than the road behind him. Mm,
interesting. Very interesting.
Yes.
So you mentioned the sort of obsession that Springsteen fans over like the set lists, right? And that's because yes. In his normal E Street Band concerts, he varies it up so much. You know, there's a handful of sort of core songs that he's got to play at every show. But beyond that, you don't know what you're going to get. Yeah. And the band goes out on every tour ready to play. I believe it's something like they know like 300 songs that they've practiced up or something like that.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe that's both Max Weinberg, Jay Weinstein's son, who played guitar for a while. Jay Clemens tells that story. There are several hundred songs that they set the expectation we could be playing this.
Wow. Right. So part of the appeal and part of the reason why people go to so many shows, go to see Springsteen so many times, is because you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And you might see different songs and you can leave by saying like, oh my God, I got to see him play Johnny 99 or Seaside Bar song or whatever. Right.
Right.
So, like that. But in this, it's the same, like you said, every night. And you know that going in, you can look at the set list. You know, it's going to be standard. I joked with Patrick when he started this. I said, 2 weeks in, he's not going to be able to do this anymore. It's going to kill him. he's going to start breaking out other songs just because he has to. But that has not been the case. Amazing. Right? He's stuck with this.
That I think I would have taken that bet. You know, Billy Joel was on the Tonight Show and he talked about going to the show, and he kind of thought Bruce would invite him on stage to sing because that's what you do. No, Mary Chapin Carpenter just posted on her Instagram that she had went to the show and she was struck how beautiful it was. And it reminded her of her own creative process and what it is. So there have been a fair amount of celebrities go, many of them musicians, but they are not invited on stage. And I think what set the tone is the opening night was within a day or two of Tom Petty dying. Mm. And everyone's like, okay, he'll do a Petty song. He'll do a Petty song. And he dedicated the show to Petty, but he didn't do it. Yeah. And this is not a concert. This isn't an acoustical show. This is a true one-man Broadway show. The only time they have changed the set list is when Patty had the flu. And in the two songs that she does, he substituted a couple of songs and they were different each night.
Oh,
so
okay.
Maybe that was enough for his, like, okay, I'm not glad Petty's sick, but maybe I can mess things up a little bit, you know?
So what I want to get at here though, is for somebody like you, who's seen him perform many times.
Yeah.
Did it have a different feel beyond just sort of the venue and the, you know, the sparse nature of it, but did it have sort of a different feel? Was it sort of more cohesive in some way as sort of a complete body of work?
Yes, totally. I totally agree. It was very, I went in with very high expectations and I left with it exceeding my expectations. People had said that it's a very short little bit over 2 hours. And I agree with that. It went very quick. He is very captivating. It is, I've had a friend of mine said, I don't like My Father's House. I hate that's one of the songs. And I told him, I said, in context, every song he does comes across as different. I'm not necessarily a big fan of Born in the USA, the blues version, when, you know, he does a slide guitar.
Yeah.
And it's not, but it is amazing in the context when he talks about not getting drafted and wondering who went in his place. And you think about that, that's a very strong statement for him as, you know, as an artist. He's saying, I didn't go serve in Vietnam. Someone went in my place. I wonder who that was, and I wonder what happened to him. So the songs all tell part of the story where and so the songs help illustrate the stories, and the stories help illustrate the songs. So someone asked, would you go again? And the only reason I would go again is if I could bring someone else to let them share with it. Hmm. Otherwise, I would like, no, I'm not going to be greedy because there are so many people who want to go and tickets are so rare, but I could see you enjoying it just as much the second time.
All right, I'm in.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go.
And, you know, Jesse, just listening to you recount the experience and obviously, it seemed to me you took it the best possible way. Like that to me seems the way you should do it, right? And the way to think about it. But if I can put you on the spot a little bit here, listening to you mention his mortality, that this is a unprecedented event, you know, for a rock and roll singer to do, and he's done it so perfectly well and really is sticking to the script. What, play a, you know, prognosticator for us a little bit. What do you see him doing next? I mean, where do you think he can go from here?
Well, several music critics who've gone and said he could take this on the road, that he could do this at other venues a little bit bigger and people would enjoy it. The hope is he and the E Street Band will go out again. But I do get the feeling that the River, this massive world tour that took a year and a half, that was not supposed to happen. They were just going to do a few shows to promote the box set. Yep. And all of a sudden it just kept growing and growing and growing. You get the feeling that they knew that the amount of times they want to go out, they're going to be able to perform again, was limited. I think he loves performing too much. And I think that when this show ends in June, there's a chance he'll take it to London. I've heard that rumor, and do a run there at their version of, the theater. But then I think he will have the itch to do a tour with the E Street Band, at least. And maybe that's my hope.
Yeah. I hope that's true also. Yeah. And I can see it, if you look at his history, he's going to want to get back out with the band and play the bigger halls and rock and roll. Yeah.
I don't doubt that that's what he'll want to do. The question is just now becoming, can the E Street Band go on tours like this, with what you've seen, in some of the changes, but to me, he's like an old blues performer in the sense he's going to perform until he's gone. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's just the way it is.
I believe so. I did want to say that the, a couple of things, he does a acoustical version of Dancing in the Dark, and a lot of fans beforehand, it's like, why would you pick that song of all the songs? He does Dancing in the Dark right into Land of Hope and Dreams. They just surge right next to each other. And I will tell you, that was a fantastic 1-2 punch. And the hope is HBO will film this and that it will be a special or on a Blu-ray. Someone just watched there and said that he wishes Jonathan Demme was alive to film it.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
Because he think it would be a great show. So the hope is for those who didn't get to go, they'll get to experience this.
So Dancing in the Dark is a song about aging. I think absolutely. It makes a lot of sense for it to be in there. And then you said it goes into Land of Hope and Dreams, which is this, a song about sort of looking forward and wanting the best thing. So that makes sense to me. But anyway, okay, we got to wrap this up, Jesse. So thanks very much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Great stories. And let's keep in touch. Let's go to shows. Let's do all those things. We're only about 1,000 miles apart from each
other. But we'll figure it out. And I just tell your listeners, subscribe because you can listen every day. You should listen to Rockin' the Suburbs every day. It's an apple a day may keep the doctor away. But a podcast today will keep the blues away.
Oh, very nice.
That's perfect.
Very nice. And tell people where they can find your show.
Absolutely. It is called Set Lusting Bruce on iTunes and Stitcher. My My Twitter handle is at Jesse Jackson DFW, and the show is at Setlusting Bruce on Twitter. Would love for people to check out, and I'm always looking for fans of other musicians to join me on the podcast as well. So reach out to me.
That's great. Excellent. Okay. And people can listen to Rock in the Suburbs on all the big podcast platforms.
Yep.
And if anybody else out there has seen Springsteen on Broadway, we'd love to hear your stories about it too. So you can email us rock@suburbspod.com, or you can call and leave a message 612-440-1984. Or you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Suburbs Pod. And with any of those things, I'd also like our listeners to start something of a campaign, let's say, to get Jim's wife to let him go see Springsteen on Broadway.
We can do that.
So, you know, a nice letter writing campaign through email, social media, all of that would really be helpful there. Okay. That's another way you can support the show.
Yeah. And a few dollars tucked into an envelope would also help.
There you go. So, all right. Thanks again, Jesse Jackson.
Thanks, Jesse.
And
thank you, Jim. Thank you, Patrick.
This is Rock the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys again next week. It's a town full of losers, and I'm pulling out of here to win. Ooh. Oh. Oh. Oh.
Yeah, 2018 has been we're trying to be more brevity conscious because the people who edit this, namely me and Jim, had a long year of editing last year.
Want to get some of our life back, I think.
That's right.
I understand. I appreciate that. Yeah, I will try to keep my answer short.